If you love the Packers, then you'll love today's podcast. Welcome back to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Behind the Headlines show. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. In today's show, we've got Packers beat reporters Bob McGinn and Michael Cohen chatting about Wisconsin's hometown team. But they're not the only ones bringing us the latest from Green Bay. Bill Glauber, whose voice you'll recognize from interviews on this podcast, has a story running on Sunday about something else going on in Green Bay. He sat down with me for more.
Your story focuses on efforts to retain millennials and younger workers in Green Bay. What's the economic importance of that?
Well, the economic importance is you want young college-educated people because they are the ones who are going to take higher-paying jobs. And what the Packers are attempting to do is to keep the young college-educated people in town with amenities. And the amenities are this 34-acre Title Town district that will be up by 2017.
What does it look like?
Well, from what I can see in the renderings, it looks kind of urban and really more of a suburban setting. There's right now they have plans for a hotel, a sports medicine clinic, and you can't have a big thing in Green Bay without a huge restaurant and brewery, so that's in it. And also there's design for some housing there, some condos that will then blend in with the neighborhood next to it, and also a massive 10-acre park out of the 34 acres, and part of this park will include an ice skating rink in winter. You know, there's not a lot of outdoor rinks around here. It should be a lot of fun.
And why do the Packers want to get involved with this?
Well, of course, there is a money-making aspect to this. The Packers have spent about $60 million by the time it's all done in terms of acquiring the land, clearing the land, and creating the public space. And then there will be a build-out in which the Packers will own the land, and like a shopping mall, firms will come in and lease the space. So that should provide a lot of revenue for the Packers going forward.
What's the city of Green Bay's involvement with this project?
Well, this actually is in the village of Ashwaubenon. So it's the village of Ashwaubenon that will have, you know, that will have to sign off on the project. But also, you mentioned Green Bay, and that's very important because Green Bay has its own development on the Fox River, and that's become a little urban oasis for younger people. And so what they're hoping is that the two, Green Bay and Ashwaubenon, will be able to feed off one another, and it will be a destination for fans and also residents.
Now, as a general assignment reporter, this isn't the first time that you've written about the economic impact of sporting events. So you wrote about one most recently with the golf tournament the PGA tournament that happened in Kohler. How do you come up with your story ideas?
Well, you know, the story ideas, sometimes they just sort of walk into the newsroom. There's some obvious stories, and you have to sort of, I think I try to take one idea, add a second idea, and then you create the story, which is the third idea. So that's what I've done throughout my career. I used to be a sports writer, so I'm familiar with that area. And, you know, as I've grown older and learned about business and learned about news, I try to combine all three to create some of these stories.
Again, Bill's story is slated to run in Sunday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you don't have a chance to pick up a copy, you can always find it online at jsonline.com/news. The 2016 Olympic Games are coming. If you're looking to head down, you'll be following in the footsteps of Wisconsin triathlete Gwen Jorgensen. Her family took a trip down to Rio de Janeiro to watch her Olympic qualifier. And if you're interested in heading to Rio, Gwen's mom may have some travel tips for you. WisconsinTrails.com editor Chelsea Lewis has the latest.
Nancy Jorgensen is the mother of Gwen Jorgensen, who, if you don't know who that is, you should, because she is a Waukesha native and she is the world's top triathlete. She's this fantastic athlete. I think she's won something like the last 12 triathlon competition, world competitions she's taken part in. So there was an Olympic qualifying event in Rio. As you know, Rio will be hosting the 2016 Summer Olympics. So Nancy and her family, her husband Joel and their older daughter Elizabeth, all went down to watch the qualifying event, watch Gwen compete. And then they, you know, experienced Rio while they were there. So it's kind of a fun story, a nice, really nice personal and local connection, along with some cool highlights of Rio de Janeiro.
And how did you get this story?
So Nancy contacted us. I think she might have written for us during the last Summer Olympics in London when Gwen competed. You know, just it's a really nice, interesting perspective because it's the mother of this top world athlete, but providing kind of a down-to-earth perspective on watching her daughter compete and also experiencing the city while they were there.
What was the experience you were most envious of?
Well, they did a lot of really cool things. I mean, of course, they went to the Christ the Redeemer statue. That's kind of the classic picture you see of Rio de Janeiro, the statue on the top of the mountain with his arms open. They did a really cool bike tour of the city. They did a walking tour. They went to a nightclub and did samba. They had some Brazilian steak, kind of this never-ending steak skewers. That doesn't that sound awesome? And then, of course, they watched Gwen compete, and she took the top spot. So she won the qualifying event and will be competing next year in Rio.
I can't imagine a vacation where you have to balance the nerves of watching someone you love compete for an Olympic slot. How did she write about that?
Totally, yeah. I think they're probably used to it, I guess I could say, by now, because Gwen has competed pretty extensively over the past couple of years. Mostly, it sounded like she was just really happy to be reunited with Gwen. Gwen and her husband, Patrick, had gone off to training camps, I think she said, in maybe December, and they hadn't really seen them since. So this was their first time. They took this trip at the end of July, beginning of August. So this was the first time kind of reuniting. So it was a nice reuniting of the family. You know, the whole family was together. And then also watching her compete.
What kind of safety tips or just general travel tips did she offer?
Yeah, absolutely. So Rio, like any big city, you know, you have to be really careful with your money and valuables. She said that they didn't wear any, you know, expensive jewelry out. They kept their money close. Credit cards are pretty widely accepted, but you will need cash for things like taxis and street food, and it's just good to have cash on hand. But the currency exchange rate is really good right now for U.S. dollars. So Rio kind of used to have a reputation as a little more expensive city, but because the exchange rate is so good right now, you can get some really good deals.
All right, that'll be great for anyone looking to head down.
Absolutely.
To check out Nancy Jorgensen's Rio travel tips, pick up Sunday's edition of the Journal Sentinel. You can also find the story online at jsonline.com. Economists and consumers have been looking for signs of economic recovery since the recession hit in 2008. They received a bit of good news this week. U.S. banks, including Wisconsin banks, posted their most profitable quarter in history during the second quarter. I sat down with business reporter Paul Goris for more.
This week there were some numbers that were released about banks and the revenue, both in the U.S. and in Wisconsin. Could you walk me through your story about that?
The FDIC releases numbers for every quarter of the year about how our banks are performing financially, and this most recent, the second quarter, the one that ended June 30th, was they recorded the biggest or highest profits ever for a single quarter, $43 billion, which was up about 7% from the same time last year. So what it shows is that banks is in the country, there are about 6,500 banks altogether, taken as a group, are really doing pretty well again after being down. Remember, during the recession, they were down so bad, and they were, you know, closing them, and being driven by loan demand as the economy picks up. Businesses are starting to build things and buy new equipment, and there's sort of a mini construction, not mini, it's a legitimate construction boom going on in the country at the same time, and the banks are financing a lot of that.
And if you are a consumer, what does this mean for you? Is there any sort of effect this will have for consumers?
Probably not directly, other than as long as the economy stays good. I mean, this is a reflection of a better economy. And as the economy gets better, probably we're going to see interest rates go up a little bit. So if you're a borrower for a house, trying to get a mortgage or home equity line of credit, those rates will probably start to inch up a little bit, but right now they're still low. You know, the market had a bad week, and people are worried about China's economy slowing down. So as long as there's sort of bad economic news in the world, that kind of helps keep rates low. And right now our Fed, the bank people in charge of the banks are trying to decide whether they should finally start raising rates just a little bit, because our economy is maybe at the point where they could do that and not, you know, shut the faucet off on the growth.
That's what I was just going to ask you, if you think that this news will influence the possibility of rising or raising that level.
I don't know if it would have an influence on it. The banks are in pretty good shape now. The regulators worry mostly about, you know, could they sustain big losses and things like that, but that would take a bad economy for that to happen again. Most of them are on pretty solid ground right now, and I don't know if that would come into play and whether rates would go up. I think it's more revolves around whether the economy is strong enough to handle a rate increase. And it wouldn't be a big one. You know, if it happens, it might be a series of really small ones just to see how it goes. You know, if it went badly, they'd put the brakes on it, I think, rather than, you know, take us down a road toward another recession. They don't want that either.
Paul's story ran in Thursday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you're interested in reading it, you can always find it online at jsonline.com/business. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has been generating headlines throughout his presidential campaign. This week, he came out swinging with a statement about President Barack Obama and police shootings. Editor Greg Borowski sat down with reporters Mary Spicuzza and Patrick Marley for the scoop on this story.
Mary, let's start with a piece this morning you had that the governor had an opinion piece out there about police shootings and made some comments that connected some of the increase or the seeming increase to President Obama. Tell us a little bit about what the governor wrote this morning.
Yeah, it was a bit surprising. On a conservative website yesterday, he wrote a piece saying that under President Obama, that we've seen an increase in racial tensions, that there's been a rise in anti-police sentiment, and that he attributed that in part to Obama's leadership. He called him a divider-in-chief and said that if, you know, when he was elected, he would be a uniter-in-chief instead.
All right, and then we've already gotten the pushback, sort of the two-step process here. The governor makes a statement, and then the campaign pushes back a little bit on it. But what was the pushback on from the campaign?
Yeah, we haven't heard from the campaign directly yet. They did say they'd send me some materials, but we heard from Charlie Sykes was criticizing the headline that said President Obama, or Scott Walker says President Obama partly to blame. The take was he never said that he never blamed Obama. He just mentioned the two and rising racial tensions, right, but never blamed the president directly.
So he just puts them both there and maybe invites the reader to connect the dots, but says he didn't connect them. So.
We've seen a lot of headlines that say Scott Walker : President Obama to blame for police shootings, so certainly we were not the only ones to make that interpretation.
Patrick, let me ask you this question. Was this, just from all the issues we've heard in the campaign, we haven't heard this one before. Does it surprise you at all that this is the issue of the day for the Walker campaign?
Yeah, it's surprising, I think. I mean, it is a pivot to a new issue. We haven't really heard him speak out on this kind of thing before. I think this is, you know, he's been looking for an issue for a while now, and as Trump has risen and he's gone down. So this is the latest one, and it shows him walking that tightrope again, where he's speaking a message that is very appealing to Republicans who are primary voters, but he's got to be careful because these things will live out there into a general election, and if he were to get the nomination, certainly that would be used against him.
Yeah, so Mary, I mean, we've heard, Sheriff David Clark has been making this sort of case before with his comments on national media outlets on the Black Lives Matter movement and other things. Did it surprise you as a longtime Walker watcher to have this come up?
It did, yeah. It sounded much more like Sheriff David Clark than the Governor Walker that we're used to. You know, Sheriff Clark previously said Obama helped incite the riots in Ferguson. He's called it Black Lives Matter. And I think we're used to a much more tempered Governor Walker. However, I know that he's kind of switching his aggressively normal message to aggressive, and maybe this
maybe
is part of it.
Normally aggressive is what we're looking for, right?
Okay. Yeah, so this seemed, it seemed very Clarky.
For more political coverage, visit jsonline.com/politics. You can find more on Governor Walker at jsonline.com/Scott Walker. And as usual, that audio came to us from our JS on Politics show, which airs at noon on Thursdays. If you missed this week's show, you can find the full replay online at jsonline.com. You can also listen to that show through iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Has Aaron Rodgers gotten enough reps in preparation for the NFL season that starts next Sunday versus the Bears in Chicago? Packers beat writers Bob McGinn and Michael Cohen discussed that topic, among others, in their weekly Packers podcast last week after Rodgers set out the third exhibition game against the Eagles.
I guess I'll throw this in here now. I would have played Aaron Rodgers in that game.
Okay.
A series, maybe two. I mean, I think... To me, it sends a bad message. You know, you got to play the game, Mike, you know, and these guys are, you just have to play the game. And to me, you can control that. You can chip over in Barkley's side. You can put Rodgers in the shotgun. I don't think Billy Davis would have been blitzing Rodgers being a complete jerk at that point. I just don't think a guy who once coached for the Packers would want that on tape. That would really probably hurt his career if he would have done something like that, knowing Rodgers would just play a series or two. Bad message. I don't like it. I would have played the guy. And I think there's ways that you can really, really minimize the chance of risk. Screen, draw, chip, throw bubble screens, just get the ball out of his hand. Get him on that field and let a crowd of 75,000 and his 85 teammates know that we're trying to play a game, not just run away from out of fear's sake.
Well, to take that a little bit further, he and McCarthy and the rest of the starters have vehemently denied the fact that the lack of reps for Rodgers will influence his performance in the regular season. Do you buy that, or is that just rationalizing the decision they've made to bench him?
There was a playoff game against the Giants a couple of years ago, Mike, in which the Packers clinched. And so I think he took a game off, and then they had a bye week, and then they played the Giants. He had like 20 days, 21 days between action, and he played mediocre at best, and they got beat. We're not going to see Rodgers with this revamped Jordy Nelson minus receiving core. That's a problem. Although maybe they figure the Bears' defense is so bad, first game under Fangio. They don't have much in personnel, obviously, the Bears, but yet you don't know what Fangio could do with an entirely new cast of characters on opening day. But maybe they think they can just win that game in Chicago. They dominate the Bears anyway. Maybe that's it. But I would be a little concerned if I was Clements and Bennett and McCarthy.
I would too, but for a different reason.
Okay.
We don't hear the medical reports every day, and the offensive linemen certainly are under no pressure to tell us the truth when they speak with the reporters about how they're feeling. I'm not 100% convinced that Bakhtiari and Lang will be totally ready to go for this first game. I mean, they might play, but they might not be themselves. And so I'm kind of wondering, you know, we've talked about the continuity with the receivers, but let's say one or two or three of those guys, for whatever reason, is unable to go. I think as a quarterback, I would have liked a few reps with some of the guys that would be replacing them, just to sort of get comfortable with the Don Barclays, with the Lane Taylors, with the Josh Walkers, in case they're pressed into action out of emergency or anything there. So, you know, those guys have sworn, well, Lang we haven't heard from because of a concussion, but Sitton and Bakhtiari have promised that they will be ready to go for the season opener. But there's been a lot of times guys have promised to play over the years in football and it doesn't work out that way, you know? It's just another element there that I think adds a bit of confusion.
If you're not already subscribed to the Packers podcast, jump on that before the season starts. You can find those online at jsonline.com/Packers Podcast. or on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Speaking of iTunes and Stitcher Radio, you can subscribe to this show on both of those as well. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining me. Be sure to check back next week as I walk you through some of the biggest headlines at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.